The South Akron Youth Mentorship is exactly what the name implies. These folks mentor the youth of Akron, Ohio. If you would like to volunteer or perhaps help with a charitable donation, please visit saymentor.org and find out how you can help out today. That's saymentor.org.
Welcome to the Phil Nasons Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We're going to be here for the entire hour. We're going to have a blast talking Cleveland Indians baseball. Fantasy hoops replacing Wesley Matthews. That ain't going to be easy. Joe Mullinax and I are going to talk about Peyton Manning coming back, as well as some free agents who will be signing with new teams very shortly. But up first, the San Antonio Spurs, for those of you who wrote them off, you know, I like to pick on them, but I don't pick on them this year. And they're playing good basketball now. And joining me to talk all about them and more, please welcome from PoundingTheRock.com, J.R. Wilco is in the house. J.R., how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Doing great, Phil. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure, man. I have a piece of candy bar in my mouth here. That's never a good thing. But folks used to rip me big time, if you remember. When I decided, I thought Kawhi Leonard was going to be a star coming out of college. And when he was drafted by when he ended up with the San Antonio Spurs, I thought he was going to be a star for sure. And people thought that was stupid. The last three games, I'm starting to think I was right.
Well, I got to say, I'm not going to debate that. They look like they are playing the way that we expected them to as soon as everyone got healthy, and especially Kawhi Leonard. For the second time in his career, we got to see him go off for 20-plus points three games in a row. First time he did that was last year in the NBA Finals, and this year he just now did it last week. And this is exactly why Spurs fans were so worried during the rodeo road trip, is that everybody was back healthy and they weren't playing like this. So it just took a few extra games, looks like, but they're making a move. They are just like three games out of a fourth seed in the West. They've got everybody back healthy, and Kawhi Leonard is working through those growing pains as becoming the man, in the same way that Tony Parker did early in his career, when Popovich would get on him for being aggressive, and then the next game he was getting on him because he wasn't getting enough people involved in the offense. Finding that balance and knowing what's required of him in which game is a tough thing. And a few times this season, Kawhi's gone, okay, nobody else is scoring, I need to get out there and score, and it just hasn't worked out like that. He's got to let the game come to him. There are times to exert himself, but he can't try to put it on himself every time down the court. And he's learning as he goes.
You know, I think it's different for Leonard than it was for Parker, though. In one respect, Parker was used to being a star. I mean, he had his own little star. I know Tim Duncan is there and Manu Ginobili, but if you look at it, I think Tony Parker probably has a bigger fan base because he has more of them. He's from a bigger place.
Yeah.
But Kawhi Leonard, though, on the other hand, he's looking around and he hears Tim Duncan say, "It's not my team anymore, it's his. We just follow him." And there are times when he wanted to do things and he doesn't know when to, okay, let me continue to take over like he does in the finals, you know? And maybe that's what it is. I don't really know. But all I can tell you is he's looked good. And because of this, everybody else seems to be able to play at their pace or pace themselves, as some of these guys seem to be doing, because the playoffs are looming very closely.
Yeah.
Are you feeling much better?
I'm feeling much better. I mean, I never counted them out. Jesus Gomez and I had a story a couple weeks back about, you know, the struggles that the Spurs were having and exactly how to handle those as a fan. And honestly, it's great to see them play like this. It's great to see, but we really need to see them play like this against the top competition. And as we're recording this right now, you and I, the Spurs were thrashing the Bulls in San Antonio. And that's fantastic because the Bulls are the second seed in the East, but you know they're missing their top two players, and it's not the same. It's not the same as taking on teams that are healthy and are at the top. So in the next few games, as they play Dallas and the Thunder, and I think we got the Warriors coming up again here soon. That's when we're really going to find out where the Spurs are leading into the playoffs, because it's not enough to beat the lower tier teams, but it sure is helpful for Spurs fans to be happy about, because they weren't even there was a stretch there where they weren't even beating the teams, whether it was good or bad, whether it was a good win or a bad win, they weren't even beating the teams when they were losing to Utah in Utah on the road.
Cleveland's Thursday night at home.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. If the Spurs West play as well as the Spurs East did the other night, because I call the Atlanta Hawks the Spurs East, you folks missed the San Antonio Spurs from last year's finals. Watch Atlanta play all year. It's the same thing, only younger and starless. What do you think is going to happen here on Thursday night? That's the big game this week. They have Toronto on Tuesday, but Cleveland is their big test, and then they've got a couple of cupcakes, and then they have Atlanta next Sunday.
Yeah, so Cleveland...
Or in 2 weeks, I'm sorry.
Yeah, in 2 weeks. So Cleveland's third in the East. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. They are, you can never count out a team that has LeBron on it. I'm curious to see what happens in that game, because right now up until those last few games, the Spurs haven't looked like the Spurs except for little bitty stretches all season long. There were the injuries, and then they were coming back from the injuries, and then they just now getting their feet. So Cleveland's going to be a huge test. But Popovich usually has a few really good things in place to be able to make LeBron think about what he's doing instead of just being able to stay comfortable. You know, being comfortable is one of the biggest things about playing basketball. You can't think about too many things, like we talked about last week. And I'm curious as to what kind of stuff they're going to do to scheme that offense and to make LeBron think a little bit more and keep him out of his comfort zone.
Here's the key to beating Cleveland, because I watch them all the time. If your big men can score, you have no problems, because their big men can't defend, except for Timothy Mozgov, and he winds up late to the party because he's guarding his man, and Kevin Love won't guard his. So he has to kind of help him out a little bit, and that gets him into trouble. Tristan Thompson's a decent big, but he's not going to stop Tim Duncan. They don't have anybody to stop Tim Duncan. If I were coaching this team, I would put Tim Duncan down on the block and say, stay there. You don't even have to come back for defense. Just stay there and play the whole 40 minutes, and I will dust off Cleveland like they were lint. And it looks like we lost J.R. Wilco again. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, sure.
Yeah.
And I would dust them off. I would just put Duncan on the block and dust them off. And it would be a party, that's for sure. Because they can't, like I said, they can't defend. And that's what I would do. What do you think they're going to do? Doggone it, we lost JR. That's a bummer. But we'll get through it. And we want to thank JR for being here. And we will see them next week, hopefully. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We continue previewing Major League Baseball teams, and today we're going to talk about the Kansas City Royals with Rush Olson from Rush Olson Creative and Sport. Rush, welcome back. How are you today?
I am great. Thanks for having me here, Phil.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. Now, the Kansas City Royals made it to the World Series last year. God bless them. They had a very good team. Even though they got past the Tigers, I was very thrilled for them because Ned Yost is a fine guy, and his team was really good. And they did some interesting things this year. First of all, gone. Billy Butler, gone.
James Shields, big game James, who really you Royals fans know wasn't very big or didn't pitch very many big games in the playoffs. So he's gone. And the new guys, Alex Rios, which I think was probably the steal of the whole hot stove season. Enderson Volquez, which was a very good pickup. And that's it. They did a really good job, though.
Well, and don't forget Kendra Morales, too.
Oh, I forgot about
theoretically him. Comes in to replace Butler.
That's right. Kendrick Morales is there if he can get it done, though. You know, he makes me nervous, Kendrick Morales.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, keep in mind that last year he didn't get signed. He got a qualifying offer, and so nobody wanted to give up a first-round draft pick for him. So he didn't get signed until midseason. So he didn't have a spring training. He didn't have any opportunity to get into a groove. And so he didn't play to his track record last year. This year he's going to have the full offseason, and the Royals are hoping that that's going to mean he's going to have a more of a normal sort of year for him.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see. You know, usually when guys are good, they give up that first-round pick. And people think that this guy can't hit anymore. He played okay, though, last year. I mean, I'm not throwing dirt on the guy yet. You know, he's not ready for this deep six in baseball terms. But still, he's going to have a hard time getting past Eric Hosmer because Hosmer's going to be good. This infield is basically the same as last year. You've got Salvador Perez catching, Eric Hosmer at first, Omar Infante at second. You've got Alcides Escobar at short and Mike Moustakas, the Greek kid, playing third. I like this team.
Absolutely. I think Moustakas is one of the real keys to what this team does this year because he sort of had his coming out party in the postseason. He hit some home runs. He was a big part of their drive to the World Series. And the question, and he was a top draft pick. He was a high draft pick. Can he take that success and convert it over into a bigger sample size and be successful during the regular season and sort of live up to his pedigree? If he can do that, that really makes the Royals look like the favorites in that division.
Yeah, the problem that I learned from Craig Brenner, who covered them last year, who's now doing something for some politician who's moved up in the world, obviously, he can no longer be on the show, which is disappointing to me. But either way, it is what it is. He says the guy's not consistent enough and never will be. And Craig's usually right about these things. So I don't know, you know, but he's a Greek kid, and we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's Greek.
I saw that he was working this spring on hitting the other way, on bunting, try to get away from that shift they throw on him. And, of course, the other way you can beat the shift is by hitting over it like he did during the postseason last year. And, you know, so, I mean, if the kid is committed to improving and being better, you know, that's a necessary precursor to being the player that they hope he can be. And yeah, he's a good Greek kid. And so we'll hope that it works for him.
We certainly do, you know, but I'm not throwing dirt on him either. I'm just saying that he did have some big hits, but is he going to be consistent? And that's the key. And they picked up Omar Infante and he's a good one. This infield is really good. I like Sal Perez a lot. He had some big hits last year for them too. And that's the whole thing about the Kansas City Royals. And one thing I want to throw some caution is that they won a lot of games like the Cardiac Kids. And it's hard to replicate and duplicate that. You know, you had a Cinderella season. Now they got to put themselves in a position where they're going to not have to play catch up all the time.
Well, I think one thing that might give you some hope there is that there's a chance that their starting pitching is actually better than it was last year, even though they lost James Shields, because you brought in Volquez, who had a good year last year and certainly has always had really good stuff. You brought in you've got Danny Duffy, who I think is a huge key to the success of that rotation. Because remember, he was having a good year last year. Then he got hurt. He wasn't quite as effective. If he bounces back and he's as good as he was the early part of the season last year, I think that really shapes up well for them. And then you got to figure that Giordano Ventura is going to be – has the potential to improve upon what he did last year. He's still very young. And so if he gets better and those other guys perform the way they're expecting to, their starting staff could be even better than they were last year.
Well, I think they are better. You know, they don't have to worry about big game James anymore. This Ventura kid is fantastic. He had a great year last year. Jason Vargas, that's the key right there, that number two slot.
Can he replicate his success? Yeah.
There you go. You know, because he was one of those tweener guys, you know, and he had a very good season in 2014. Anderson Volquez pitched pretty well last year at times. What's he going to do? I like the comment you made about Danny Duffy. I like him, and I like Jeremy Guthrie, too. But what I like, we'll get to the outfield in a second, Rush, but what I like is this bullpen. You know, you've got Wade Davis as the setup man, and you've got Greg Holland as the closer. If these guys can stay healthy along with this kid, Tim Collins, and Kelvin Herrera, you've got a good bullpen. Unlike the Toronto Blue Jays, who we talked about yesterday, these guys are for real. If you get the game into the eighth inning with a lead, you could pretty much think you've won.
Well, and I think they have the potential to be even stronger this year than they were last year. I mean, it's getting the game to the sixth inning. They've also got Jason Frazier. Luke Hochevar is potentially back from his injury. I mean, this bullpen is stout.
Yeah, double stout. I like this bullpen. They're not going to beat my Tigers, but that's another issue. You know, we'll discuss that again later on after I get all these previews out of the way. But they're going to be really good. I don't think there's a better bullpen in the American League than this team. I don't care what you Yankee fans say. This Kansas City team, man, they have a very good bullpen. The A's have a good bullpen too. But Kansas City's got the best bullpen that I've seen in the American League, at least on paper. We don't know, obviously, until a few more weeks. But this outfield is good too. You've got Alex Gordon out there in left, Lorenzo Cain, who had a really good season last year. And then you have Alex Rios, who had trouble in Texas for two reasons. One, he was hurt, and two, he just was hurt. And the whole team was hurt, and everything just got overshadowed.
Well, and the Rangers didn't pick up his option last year, and Rios was not bad in Texas. He didn't hit for the power that he had at some points in the past. He's still a good defensive outfielder, and so, you know, I agree with you that I think this could be a very apt pickup by the Royals. This could very well be something that they look at and feel pretty good about having picked him up and to slot into right field. They've got some depth in that outfield, though, no question.
Oh, yeah, they sure do. And you know who's going to be sitting there running number four is Jared Dyson, who also had a very good year last year. And then you have this kid named Terrence Gore, who's a nice player, too. They've done a good job in Kansas City, and, you know, they do have a little bit of money to spend, and fortunately they didn't waste it on Big Game James, because when you have a nickname like Big Game James and you pitch like Small Game James in the playoffs, you're bye-bye James come 2015.
Wow, you've gone a little harsh on James Shields here. He was a big part of their team during the regular season.
Yeah, but the regular season means nothing when you get to the playoffs in the World Series. They could have won the World Series, Rush. It could have been a Cinderella story. I love the Kansas City Royals fan base. They are always fair to me. And I wanted them to win the World Series last year because of those nice fans who've struggled and tormented by bad teams year after year. They finally got a good one and Big Game didn't show up.
Well, I certainly am sympathetic to the Kansas City fans in that way, for sure, because they did. I mean, it had been 1985 since they had made the postseason, and they definitely deserved that run, for sure.
They did, and you know what else they deserved? Ned Yost. That's a guy who deserved to win, too. He's been toiling for a long time as well, but he's one of the best managers in baseball. Now, when you look at this team, though, we've got about a minute. We just zoom through these things usually. What do you see as their Achilles heel?
Well, it's certainly not the bullpen, and it's probably not the starting pitching. I suppose it could be depth in the lineup. They don't have maybe the depth of hitters that some others do. But, you know, if guys show up and play well, you know, if Kendrys Morales performs to his track record, that may not be a problem either. So, you know, they look in pretty good shape for doing something again this year.
You know, they do. And this is going to be a very fun 2015, the American League Central is stacked. And I think what we'll do is we'll do the Indians and we'll do the White Sox next week, Rush.
That sounds great.
All right. That was Rush Olson. Thank you, by the way, for being here.
And
we'll see you next week.
For sure.
All right. That was Rush Olson. And you can catch him over at rusholson.com. And we'll be right back. You are listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The NFL free agency period begins tomorrow, and we're going to talk about that. But up first, we're going to talk about Peyton Manning, my man Peyton, back for another season.
And joining me to do just that from GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Joe Mullinax is in the house. Joe, what's up?
How are you doing, Phil? Happy to be on. Happy that winter is slowly but surely fading away and spring is coming, which means we're one more season closer to football season.
Absolutely. It's fine with me to get this spring on the road. It is cold here. It's not cold today, though, but I'm keeping my winter gear for another month.
Probably smart. Probably the right decision to make there.
It's awful here, dude. The weather sucks, but it is what it is, and we could talk a little football. One thing that doesn't suck, Peyton Manning is coming back for his 18th season, and he took a pay cut to do it.
He did. He went down $4 million, which it's always funny. Oh, man, how nice of him to take a $4 million pay cut. That obscene amount of money to you and I and most everybody else in the world. Peyton Manning, like, you know what? I can take that pay cut and make it work. He goes down from $19 million this year to $15 million. It becomes an incentive, basically. If the Denver Broncos win the Super Bowl this season, he'll get that $4 million back. It's basically an incentive in the deal now. It's not a guaranteed or a part of his salary number. So he's still basically making almost $1 million per football game he plays this coming season. But at the same time, it's a situation where it does help Denver be a little bit more cap flexible. Obviously, they're looking to keep, you know, their tight end Julius Randle. They just recently put the franchise tag, I believe, on Demaryius Thomas, their wide receiver. So they've got pieces that they want to keep. They want to do their best to put the most competitive team out there that they can and surround Peyton with pieces, because you could tell in the second half of last season, Peyton Manning isn't quite what he was even when he first returned. And that first season back with the Broncos, he's starting to lose arm strength. You can see the ball fluttering a little bit. So they don't want to have to put as much on him. Peyton Manning, don't get me wrong, still a top five quarterback in the NFL, but he's not going to be as dominant a force, I don't think, in this probably his last season in the league. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out. Taking that pay cut, you call it a pay cut, but if they win the Super Bowl, he gets an incentive. And then also, you know, this is a guy, Papa John's, DirecTV, all sorts of, you know, nationwide sponsorships. He signs up for a couple more of those, and that money's right back in his pocket.
Well, there you go. That's just it. He's got a lot of endorsements. That's why he probably makes more off the field than he does on the field. So what's the difference? But here's the thing. This is what people probably don't understand. It's just like with the Spurs. They talk about how selfless these guys are. Yeah, okay. When these guys go somewhere, do you think they pay? The owners of these teams pay. They get gifts all the time. $4 million, this is nothing. He's going to do well. And it's nice that he came back. He's making a seemingly sacrificial move. And maybe it is. But more than likely, it isn't. Because he probably has other incentives in that contract, too, that he will reach. Like touchdown passes thrown, interceptions 10 or less, bonus. He's got it made. He doesn't need it. If he needed money, he wouldn't have signed with Denver in the first place. I mean, it is what it is. God bless him, though. It's going to be nice to see number 18 back out there for at least one more season. Joe, I really like that. He's coming back. I was kind of worried about him a couple years ago. I was actually hoping that he would retire because I didn't want to see him get his head knocked off and end up crippled. But he's proven me wrong. My fears were relieved watching him play. And now I get to talk about the free agents, Joe. Natakam Sue. Man, this dude is going to break the bank with the Miami Dolphins if all these rumors are true.
$60 million guaranteed. That's one of the highest, if not the highest, numbers of guaranteed money that has ever happened in the NFL, and he's worth every penny. He really is. Something as a Washington Redskins fan myself that makes me wince a little bit for the Miami Dolphins is the Albert Haynesworth deal that the Redskins signed with him, and obviously that did not work out well for the Washington Redskins. But in this case, you have a guy in Sue who truly is dominant in every aspect of the game, maybe only J.J. Watt in front of him in terms of ability to really impact a game defensively. He can play into either interior defensive line position. He makes every defensive lineman on your team better instantly because Sue is going to command double and triple teams. So guys like Cameron Wake on the Dolphins defensive line, who's already a good football player, you can expect even better numbers from him and even more success because Sue is going to command so much attention. The key is going to be, is he going to be able to stay motivated? This is a guy who mentally, I don't want to say unstable because I don't know the man, but he's done things in the past, especially on the field, that make you question his decision-making. Is he going to stay committed to making that Miami Dolphins football team a contender? And when you give that much money to somebody, he's the key piece in your puzzle. He has got to perform. And if he doesn't, this is going to completely obliterate Miami. If he does, you know, this is a team in a all of a sudden much more competitive AFC East with LeSean McCoy reportedly going to sign a 5-year extension with the Buffalo Bills. Once that trade with the Philadelphia Eagles goes down, now you have Sue in Miami. You know, the Patriots, defending Super Bowl champions, their division just got a little bit tougher today.
Yeah, sure did, didn't it? So did the Jets matchups. How are my Jets going to win the Super Bowl now?
Well, the Jets, if they pull off that trade with Brandon Marshall, that's one I left out. That's another deal that makes the AFC East that much tougher. Now, obviously, who's going to throw him the football is the major question in New York. But at the same time, Brandon Marshall's a heck of a piece. And now that you have Eric Decker being his more traditional number two receiver role, which he'll excel at, he wasn't a bad number one, but he's at his best as a number two guy. Now you have real threats down the field and across the middle that if they can find someone to throw him the football, the Jets will be improved as well.
Well, I'm coming out of retirement and playing quarterback for them. I need to win for my Jets because they haven't had a quarterback with heart in a long time. But Dez Bryant. Speaking of a guy who some of his moves are questionable, they just tagged him with the franchise tag in Dallas. Is Jerry Jones going to lose his bad boy?
Not this year. I think that you really have to sit down and what the franchise tag means is it's a contract that's a 1-year deal that's the average of the top 5 salaries of the position in the NFL. So the top 5 numbers in terms of yearly salary at the wide receiver position, you average those 5, and that's what Brian is making this coming season. In order to override that, a team would have to give Dallas 2 first-round picks to make a signing of Dez Bryant. Is a team out there going to say Dez Bryant is worth 2 first-round picks plus all the money they're going to have to pay him? I'm doubtful. I don't think that that's going to happen. I think you slap on that tag, people aren't going to be willing to give up that much to get a wide receiver. Maybe if you franchised an Andrew Luck, maybe then you would see something like that happen, but not with a wide receiver, certainly not a running back, any of those kinds of players. I would say he's going to stay Dallas and he'll be there, and he'll probably be re-signed next year. Marco Murray, the running back, will probably come back. You know, it's all just kind of a smoke and mirrors game in Dallas right now. Jerry's going to keep those 3 guys together, Bryant, Murray, and then, of course, Tony Romo.
Yeah, I think so, too. Randall Cobb is going to stay in Green Bay. That's good for them. Let's see. There's a couple other guys here. We only have about a minute and a half. I really like the franchise tag with Demaryius Thomas. That's a good move. DeMarco Murray's obviously is going to stay. Justin Houston, the ferocious linebacker from Kansas City, is he going to move? He's going to get paid some serious money to stay.
I think he's another guy that got the franchise tag, and he's going to stay in Kansas City.
He got the franchise tag, Joe.
Yeah. So he's a guy that, especially in the AFC South, like I was just saying, I need somebody to, obviously, the Texans have that in Clowney if he can stay healthy, and J.J. Watt, of course, you know, the monster J.J. Watt, one of the best defensive players, if not the best defensive player since Reggie White in the NFL. But you look at the situation of a Houston rushing the pass, 22 or so sacks this past season. You're going to need somebody to get to the quarterback in the NFL nowadays, because it's such a pass-heavy league and the quarterbacks are such an important part of the process. So Houston's a guy that you're going to see held on to. I think you're going to see players like maybe a Brian Arakpo, who played for the Washington Redskins this past season, other pass-rushing outside linebacker, defensive end types maybe get paid a little bit more than you would think they deserve because of the fact that pass rushers are on such a premium, or at such a premium. Guys like Jerry Hughes that's coming out of Buffalo, also Jason Pierre-Paul, who got the franchise tag in New York. But there's other pieces that are these linemen that are able to get, and outside backers that are able to get after the passer. They're going to be put at a premium as the NFL continues its push as a pass-happy league.
Sounds good. Should be interesting. We'll talk to you later in the week. We'll talk a little hoops. Thanks, Joe.
Sounds good to me. Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Phil.
Yep, that's my pleasure. That was Joe Mullinax, and you can find him over at grizzlybearblues.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
The Phil Nason Show will return after these brief messages.
Riveting talk radio.
People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think, and it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a very special offer. FanDuel will give you a 100% signing bonus of up to $200 with your first-time initial deposit. To receive this bonus, simply sign up at FanDuel using the promo code PhillyFlash and go win some cash with a flash at FanDuel.com.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epix Radio. Listen online, www.epixradio.com.
If you're looking for a great Portland Trail Blazers talk radio show, then look no further than the Blazers Edge podcast with Dave Deckard and Phil Nasons. For weekly hard-hitting commentary about your Trailblazers and fun NBA talk as well, please try the Blazers Edge podcast at blazersedge.com.
Maximum Sports Channels is more than just a radio station. Phil's fantasy sports blog, the writer's Garrett, up-to-the-minute news feeds, great sports and entertainment commentary, Maximum Sports TV, including professional powerboat racing, and of course, the hottest music on the planet. Maximum Sports Channels. We're more than just a radio station.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
Hi, we're Ron Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. The Toronto Blue Jays made some moves. Whether they'll work or not is anyone's guess, but we're going to take a closer look at the Blue Jays, and joining me to do just that from Rush Olson, creative in sport. Rush Olson is in the house. Rush, what's up? How are you?
Everything's good, Phil. Good to be here.
It's great to have you here. I tell you what, though, this Toronto Blue Jays team, they might be pretty good. They made some moves, gone. Let's just get rid of the guys who are gone and keep people up to date. Brett Lowry, finito. Melky Cabrera, adios. Colby Rasmus, adios. Adam Lind, adios. And welcome to the Blue Jays, Josh Donaldson, Michael Saunders, and Justin Smoak. They did a very good job, and Russell Martin. They did a very, very good job this winter.
Yeah, I have to agree. That very active winter, and they, I think all of these AL East teams sense that there's an opening here. You know, for years it was the Yankees that were going to win the East, and maybe the Red Sox were going to creep in there. But that has totally changed. It's a wide open division, and so these teams, the Blue Jays, and to some extent the last couple of years the Orioles, really went all in and said, you know what, we got a shot to make this happen.
Well, they went and did some good things. You know, the problem with Toronto over the last couple seasons isn't the talent that they had, but the health of their talent. They haven't been very good, and their starting pitching hasn't been very good. And, you know, they were rolling last year, and then all of a sudden a couple little injuries happened, and then the pitching didn't come through like it should have, and adios Toronto. But this year, they look a little better, at least on paper, that Marcus Stroman, a starting pitcher, he was pretty good last year. And Drew Hutchinson was also good. R.A. Dickey is R.A. Dickey. And Mark Burley is Mark Burley. He was hot at the beginning of the year, and then he cooled off. So this is a kind of a strange team, but they're going to score some runs, though.
Well, you know what? I think it's going to be really interesting to watch the East this year in general, because you've got several teams that almost kind of fall into the same category of, you look at the lineup and you go, okay, hey, there's a lot of really good sticks here, and they're probably going to do pretty well. But then you look at the rotation, you go, okay, you know, there might not be an ace here. There might not, you know, this rotation could either be very good or it might fall off. And so which of those teams has that happen to them is to me going to be one of the most fascinating things about watching this division, is who's pitching is going to come through. Is this year that Burley and Dickey, you know, have years to, according to their track records, and really lead this team? Or is that going to be Boston's pitching staff that comes through? Or is it going to be the Yankees staff that comes through against all odds of getting old and being hurt and all that stuff? So I think it's going to be really interesting, but Toronto has positioned themselves that if those guys come through, they've certainly got the bats to back them up.
They sure do, but let's qualify this thing with the East. The only thing that fascinates me is A-Rod.
Can he hit Mark Burley? Can he hit R.A. Dickey? And can you hit those guys on consecutive days? That's one of the interesting things about this Toronto staff, is sort of how it shapes up. You've got some of these young kids that can throw hard. Then you've got Mark Burley, who's the fast working, tricky left-hander. Then you've got the knuckleball of R.A. Dickey. You get those guys in a 3-game series, that's not going to be any fun trying to adjust from day to day.
Well, that's just it. Don't worry about A-Rod. He's not going to play every day. He's probably going to play once a week.
Trying to get his timing down against that is going to be no fun.
That will be no fun. Yeah, but Dickey throws a little bit of a fastball, though. That's the difference. But I like Stroman, and I like Hutchinson. And Norris isn't bad either. You know, Daniel Norris pitches well. Burley's Burley. You know, you never know what you're going to get from him. And Dickey is, well, Dickey. Like I said, I don't want to insult the guy. He won a Cy Young for the beloved New York Mets. So we have to jack him in there. But the deal with this baseball team is going to be the health of Jose Reyes, Jose Bautista, and Edwin Encarnacion. Those three guys have to be healthy for this baseball team to go anywhere.
I completely agree with you, Phil. They need that stout middle of the lineup to be as good as it can be. And if you look at that on paper, my gosh, yes, Reyes, then you go, you've got some point in there in some order, you've got Donaldson, Edwin Encarnacion, and Bautista. You mix Russell Martin into the mix. They've got a serious opportunity to do some damage here.
Well, they do, but I like Russell Martin better as a catcher. Now, I don't care if he hits, and I don't think they do either. He needs to handle these young pitchers, Stroman and Hutchinson, a little better. Maybe he can get Burley to pitch well on both ends of the season. And Dickey, he better bring him Pillow back there, because Dickey's knuckleball moves, man. But he's got Josh Toley for that, my favorite New York Mets catcher. Well, not really, but still, this is a really good team. You know, the other thing, too, is Dalton Pompey is finally going to make his appearance. It looks like he's going to be the starting center fielder. And how good this outfield is he's probably, or I'm sorry, but
Oh, I lost my thought. Kevin Pillar is another one who's a very good outfielder. They're going to have their issues out there for playing time, I think.
Well, and of course, some of that freed up the last couple of days when Michael Saunders got hurt, but they expect him back in April. So it might be that Pillar gets some playing time early and Pompey gets some playing time early. And we're going to see, you know, if those guys emerge, they might just keep their jobs and Saunders ends up being the fourth outfielder, which is a pretty nice option. Or, you know, if Saunders comes back in April and they need to slide him in there, they can do it.
All right, let's look at the bullpen. I don't like their bullpen.
That's a tricky part.
I don't like Brett Cecil in the bullpen. I'm sorry. I don't think he's a closer. I think they blew it letting that kid go. When they let Jansen go, I think they blew it.
Yeah, the bullpen is going to be a work in progress. They really need some guys to emerge in the spring. That's about all you could say.
You were very kind. I think they just are rough. This is not a very good bullpen, and this is going to be the problem because – and I don't want to rain on anybody's parade. Of course, they have a roof there. But needless to say, which is another issue I'm going to address this season, I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Rush, just hang in there with me, though. We have to get these previews out of the way before I start ranting again.
Let me see.
Yes, but here's the thing. If these young fellas, especially Stroman and Hutchinson, can't get past the fifth inning, or Dickey can't, or Burley. Heck, sometimes Burley can't get past the first inning. They're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, one of the dilemmas that's going to present for them is what they do with Aaron Sanchez, because he's a young pitcher. And do you want him to go to AAA and start all the time, or do you want him do you need him in your major league bullpen? And that's going to be one of the dilemmas they've got in terms of what's best for the major league club, who are clearly in a win now mode, versus what might be best for the development of Sanchez or one of the other young pitchers. Because if you need to move them into the bullpen, you've almost got to do that if you want to contend this year.
Without a bullpen, yeah, you're in big trouble. And I'm in agreement with you. I think that Sanchez would be better served to start in the minors unless he can win a starting pitching role. Maybe he can. You never know. But their bullpen's bad, Rush. I mean, when you look at it, you can't even get a – oh, boy, you'd have a hard time getting that team from Chicago out, that little league team with this bunch.
Well, okay, I will say this. Bullpens are unpredictable, both good and bad.
Yes, of course. I'm a Mets fan, I know.
Even guys with track records sometimes don't perform. Sometimes guys that throw hard come out of nowhere and are good, you know, but that's kind of what they have to hope happen because they don't have a pedigree, if you will, in that bullpen. And so they're going to have to hope it sticks together.
Yeah, they better hope from a lot of innings from Dickey, Burley, Stroman, Hutchinson, and Norris. Otherwise, they're in big trouble.
Well, the good news about a guy like R.A. Dickey is he is very durable. He throws that knuckleball so he can throw a lot of innings. As long as he's effective, you're gonna buy some time for that bullpen, and the days he starts, you feel pretty good about that.
I have to get away from this bullpen because I'm starting to get a stomachache for these poor people in Toronto who love this show, by the way. But Bautista, I look for him to be an MVP candidate this year because he's got a lot of protection in the lineup now.
Yeah, absolutely. He should get some pitches to hit. He's got to be an early front runner. Well, and heck, you think about Donaldson. I mean, what he does not only with the bat but with the glove, that they've got more than one MVP candidate potentially.
Yeah, but you know, I write for Athletics Nation, which is the top Oakland A's site. And I watch Billy Beane do his magic, and usually when he trades these guys, they usually stink afterwards. So you have to keep that in mind, too, but because he fleeces everybody. I think Jose Reyes is also a candidate for MVP. Jose Reyes just needs to stay healthy. When you watch him play baseball, and I watched him come up with the Mets, I just love the guy, really. I have a big man crush on Jose Reyes. They could have got rid of David Wright and kept Jose Reyes. I would have been a much happier guy. But he's fun to watch. Your Toronto Blue Jays folks, they're fun to watch. And when you look at DNR Navarro, who's probably going to have to be the DH, or Justin Smoke is a DH, you got a lot of offense. You got a decent starting pitching staff. And your bullpen, well, you know what? You need to go to the church and light candles. Rush, great stuff today. Thanks for being on the show with me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Phil.
All right, that was Rush Olson, and you can catch him over at rusholson.com, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show. Welcome back to The Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of sports talk. And joining me to talk Atlanta Hawks hoops, the team that knocked off the greatest team that ever was put together, the Cleveland Cavaliers, with the superstar Kevin Love. Chris Willis is in the house. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Phil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm happy. I tell you what, I'm extreme because my, oh my, oh my, the Atlanta Hawks played really good basketball on Friday night.
Yeah, it was quite a night. Unbelievable atmosphere at Phillips Arena. I was happy I got to experience that up close and personal. But yeah, just came out firing on all cylinders. Got a little sideways there in the third quarter, and then they slammed the door shut in the fourth. So yeah, it was a pretty unbelievable night all the way around. But you know, this Hawks team's kind of rose to the moment like that. So it's in the end of the day, it's just another game, but it's good. It's a good situation that they've taken three out of four from Cleveland, and could probably see those guys again at Dallas.
Oh, that's not a good thing, you see, because the Atlanta Hawks can't beat the Cleveland Cavaliers. No one can beat the Cleveland Cavaliers in a game in a best of seven series because they're the greatest team ever assembled. This is what I hear every day here in Akron.
Well, I've heard it again. I heard it again today, actually. You know, so yeah, that's the way it goes. But you know, I think the Hawks made a pretty good statement the other night. I mean, that was a much different Cavs team than they saw the last time they played them. And Atlanta pretty much dictated the pace from the get go. Like I said, Cavs got hot in the third quarter, got to the free throw line a lot. Atlanta took their best punch and then answered back in the fourth. So, it would be a great series. It's a matchup I'd love to see in the Eastern Conference Finals. I don't really want to see it before then, but will be definitely interesting and must see TV if it does happen.
It's not going to happen because Cleveland's not going to get past the first round. They're not built for the playoffs. They're awful. And they have great players, but they're not a great team. They're not even close. But the Hawks, I said this the other day. I was stuck on Saturday morning. I was at the Burger King, actually, or McDonald's, I'm sorry. I was writing my fantasy articles, and I'm listening to the Cavs fans talk. And I didn't tell them that I host the number one Hawk show. But what I wanted to say was to their reply of, the Hawks got lucky. What would you say to it before I say what I say?
I don't know that luck had anything to do with it. I do think the Hawks took advantage of all the emotion that was in Phillips Arena. It was Dominique Wilkins' night. It had been a great week of celebrating him. They came out in throwback uniforms. So I think, you know, the start you might say that, but I also think that Atlanta was locked in. They had recognized what Cleveland had done in the second half of the season, and I think they came out ready and came out with a purpose of delivering a statement, and I think they did that.
What I would say is that they were purposeful, perseverant, and they took care of business, and persistent. That's the third P, persistent. When one thing stopped working, they went to another thing and methodically beat the crap out of that basketball team in the fourth quarter. They made them look like high school kids. If that is lucky, I like luck.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'll take that all day. I mean, it was amazing. You're sitting there looking at Cleveland offensively, and I mean, it was either a long jump shot or a guy trying to put his head down and drive through three guys. And, I don't think that's as much to do with them as it is to do with Atlanta's defensive effort. Hawks did a really good job. They trapped Kyrie Irving out high, got the ball out of his hands. And the Cavs just struggled for most of the night to come up with a good answer.
They sure did. Tonight, Sacramento at home. What do you expect to see tonight?
I expect to see a more focused effort. As good as Friday was, the Hawks rested some guys Saturday, gotten upset by Philadelphia. Just a pretty dreadful shooting performance for Atlanta. It looked like they run out a little bit of gas, which is kind of to be expected as emotional a win Friday was. But, I think they'll come out again Monday and try to you know, get back on track. Sacramento, presents its own sort of challenge dealing with DeMarcus Cousins inside, George Karl's new coach. So, you know, they've got some excitement around that team. It should be a great matchup, but I think the Hawks will get back to playing Hawks basketball.
Well, I would expect that. You know, we talked with J.R. Wilco earlier in this show about if you really want to watch the Spurs of last year's finals, all you had to do was watch the Spurs East, otherwise known as the Atlanta Hawks, because they play good basketball, and they play great basketball all season long. I look for that to continue tonight against Sacramento. They do pose a challenge, but that's just a different kind of challenge. It's more of a mental challenge than a win challenge, a physical challenge. And I think they'll overcome all the shenanigans and foolishness. Rudy Gay will probably go out and get his, and Paul Millsap will clean up the mess in the end. Now, who in the heck is Jarrell Eddy, and why should we care about him?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Jarrell was he's a guy that played 4 years at Virginia Tech. He was in training camp with the Hawks. He got cut in training camp, played in the D-League with Austin Spurs, which is, that's relevant there. Austin's D-League affiliate of the San Antonio Spurs. They run a similar system. He's a good shooter, shot 42%, I believe, in the D-League from three-point range. And I think the Hawks are looking for a little bit of wing depth. Just an added guy, rewarding a guy for working hard. He's not somebody that I expect to get a ton of playing time, but at the same time, you know, he's a guy that they may try to take a look at coming down the stretch of the season.
Yeah, coincidental? I think not. The Spurs East picked up a former Spur. I'm shocked. Budenholzer knows these kids, man. He knows their whole thing. If you're good enough to play in the D-League for the San Antonio Spurs, you might actually have some talent. And well, they all have talent, actually. But Budenholzer's, he's this dialed in. Now, after Sacramento, the Hawks go on the road, and Chris will have to find something else to do rather than travel down to Phillips. Denver, Phoenix, and the Los Angeles Lakers. What do you see there, though, that three games? And then there's another five more they have to go through. What do you see happening at the beginning of this road trip?
Well, I mean, you know, years past following this team, this West Coast trip always just scares the life out of you. But, you know, Atlanta was very successful on their first trip west. Phoenix, I believe, is the only over 500 team on the trip. Until you get to the very end when you play Golden State and Oklahoma City. So, you know, Denver, that's always a tough place to play, but it hasn't been real tough for a lot of opponents this year, and they're kind of reeling after firing Brian Shaw. The Lakers, you know, they've been a mess. We all know the situation there. I mean, those are games this Hawks team's got and should win, you know. I mean, but, you know, it's also the dog days of the NBA summer, so you can't take anything really for granted. I think the Hawks got the big picture in mind now. I don't think Mike Budenholzer is going to do anything to overplay guys' minutes just to get a win. They're focused on themselves. They're trying to get better. They're trying to improve, trying to get back in a groove. But health and consistency is probably the most important things right now.
Yeah, I agree. Eight games in a row on the road, that's a long trip. But it finishes with Golden State, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, and then Orlando on the 25th. That's a long way to be away from home. But it'll be fun for them, I'm sure. They'll find something to occupy their time. But what I see is this team is fantastic basketball. I don't care. Just head and tails above anyone else in the East. And they might be right up there in the West if they were there. Now, when we look at this, we've got 1 minute left. If you were going to say who's going to give you this problem between now and next week, who's going to cause the problems?
Oh, well, I mean, that made-for-TV matchup between the Hawks and the Warriors, I mean, that's the game. Golden State's going to have something to prove in that one after Atlanta beat them in Phillips Arena. So, you know, they're the ones that are going to be – they're going to be really hungry. Phoenix battling for that eighth spot in the West. Oklahoma City, same deal. So, you know, it's going to be some playoff atmosphere in on that trip. So, yeah, it's going to be fun to see how Atlanta handles it.
It should be, and we'll be here to cover it. Thanks, Chris, for being on the show. We'll catch up with you later in the week.
Appreciate it, Phil. Thanks, man.
Thank you. That was Chris Willis, and you can find him at PeachtreeHoops.com. He's also one of the hosts of the Peachtree Hoops podcast. And that's going to wrap it up for today's show. Until next time, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you. My sister thanks you, and I thank you.